For the Federal Reserve in the modern era, independence might not be enough. You're listening to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Today is Tuesday, January 20th. The U.S. Department of Justice has launched a criminal investigation into Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell. In a video statement, Chair Powell says he is not above the law, but he also characterized the investigation as a politically motivated attempt to influence independent action of the Federal Reserve. As the political feud plays out, we talked with macroeconomist Joe Santos for insight into the consequences for the future of monetary policy. Joe Santos is the Dyckhouse Scholar in Money, Banking, and Regulation, and he is director of the Ness School of Management at South Dakota State University in Brookings. He also writes a companion piece for these Monday Macro Conversations. You can search at Joseph Santos on the Substack platform. I connected with Joe Santos from SDPB's Janine Basinger studio on the campus of SDSU.
The macroeconomic monetary policy implications of this are that I think to most observers, the interpretation has been that this is really part of a longer-lived pressure campaign on the Federal Reserve by the administration, which would like to see interest rates lower. And more aggressively so, because to be fair, the Fed has lowered interest rates throughout 2025 by 75 basis points. But the administration has long argued that the reduction should be more aggressive. So dots are being connected in the press, in the financial press, in the public more generally, that the investigation is really part of a larger whole. And that is this pressure campaign on monetary policy, and all of this, of course, being read as infringement upon what we have always taken to be, or at least in the modern era of the Federal Reserve, to be its independence.
So what does the administration want the interest rates to be lowered for? Is there a purpose to that? Just as a side note before we get into more about the actual situation here.
Sure. It's a really great question, a great side note. The administration, and in this way they are not unique to prior administrations, would like, if you will, the foot to be on the gas. And the way you stimulate aggregate demand, the way you stimulate economic activity from the demand side of markets is to make financing cheaper. And so by lowering interest rates, you create a more, we say, accommodative monetary environment. Folks can get loans for less and so on. And so projects pencil out, you know, in the way they might not otherwise if the cost of financial capital were relatively high. And so all of this means that you have more economic activity, not less. To the extent that labor is required to facilitate economic activity, you would have a stronger labor market. And so it stimulates, that is, lower interest rates stimulate the economy. And so if what you're looking to do is to have on your sort of administrative watch, as it were, to have real gross domestic product growth high, to have unemployment low, and so forth, a dominant short-run strategy would be to have low interest rates. And again, the Fed has lowered them, but it's done so in at a pace that has not suited the administration's preferences.
You said short-run strategy. So what are the consequences of lowering the interest rates too quickly? Why is the Fed not full gas?
Yeah, so the Federal Reserve has a dual mandate, and this is a mandate from Congress issued to the Fed in 1977 in an amendment to the Federal Reserve Act. There's no such thing as a mandate in 1913, but there is now. And the mandate is for full employment and stable prices, or we would think of it as low and stable inflation. And so the reason the Fed isn't acting so quickly to lower interest rates is they don't want to make the economic environment too accommodative to demand because the fear is prices will rise. This is a general rise in prices is what they're concerned about and what they watch for. That will mean a fall in the purchasing power of money, and that would go against the one part of their mandate, which is to maintain low and stable inflation. So in the short run, the logic is not incorrect. You can sort of stimulate your way into more economic activity, but the long run consequences of that would be greater inflationary pressure. So they're taking a long run view. You can think of it this way, and the administration is taking a short run view.
Chair Powell has responded in what way? What has he said about this?
So the response is, you know, to Fed watchers like myself, this is really quite an interesting saga that has unfolded. The response has been through video, which is, this is unprecedented, to sort of call out, if you will, this kind of campaign of pressure against the Fed. But Chair Powell did this and essentially connected the criminal charges to monetary policy. This is a very bold statement. You know, the threat of criminal charges is a consequence of the Federal Reserve setting interest rates essentially at a rate that the administration would prefer it not set them at.
The threat of criminal charges is a consequence of the Federal Reserve setting interest rates based on our best assessment of what will serve the public, rather than following the preferences of the president. This is about whether the Fed will be able to continue to set interest rates based on evidence and economic conditions, or whether instead monetary policy will be directed by political pressure or intimidation. I have served at the Federal Reserve under four administrations, Republicans and Democrats alike. In every case, I have carried out my duties without political fear or favor, focused solely on our mandate of price stability and maximum employment. Public service sometimes requires standing firm in the face of threats. I will continue to do the job the Senate confirmed me to do, with integrity and a commitment to serving the American people. Thank you.
So it was unprecedented to just address the pressure. Mm-hmm. It was unprecedented to do this in video format. And then there was the connecting the dots, very boldly saying, this is about monetary policy, and it's about the Fed not being as accommodative as the administration would like. So, you know, suddenly monetary policy is anything but boring. And of course, you and I have joked many times, we would like monetary policy to be very boring. And right now it is anything but.
So on your Monday Macro Substack post, you wrote, to achieve price stability, independence is necessary, but insufficient. Help us understand what you're arguing here. Independence matters, but it's not enough.
Yeah. So the attention, understandably, during this saga has been on independence. And so this is compromising central bank independence, and that's a bad thing, and so forth. And all of that is correct. That is, central bank independence is incredibly important. And so to compromise it is to compromise monetary policy outcomes. And just for the moment, why is that important? Well, because if the central bank is independent, essentially it can take the long run view. It doesn't have to go to Congress for appropriations. The members of the Board of Governors are appointed to 14-year terms. You know, they can only be dismissed for cause. So this insulates them from the political cycle, and it allows them essentially to take the long run view. And so we understandably focus a lot on the independence. What I'm arguing in the blog, though, is that is, as you say, it's a necessary condition. It's not sufficient. To have sufficiency, I argue what you also need is monetary policy. The sort of parlance is by rule as opposed to by discretion. So what the Federal Reserve does now, very sensibly, is it administers monetary policy by, you know, considering all available information and talking about its objectives and so forth. But there isn't anything explicitly linking what it does on a daily, we would say, operational basis to what it seeks to achieve, low and stable inflation or high employment. And so there isn't a clear-cut relationship, really a mathematical formula, if you will, is one way to think about this, saying when the inflation rate is this and we don't like it, or when output is that and it's, you know, higher or lower than we would like, then we will do this and this to the interest rate or whatever the case may be. That's a rules approach. And if you have central bank independence, you can stick to those rules. Those rules are credible, and that's really important for the economy to believe what the Fed says. But what I think folks also, or what they maybe don't think about as much is that having the rule actually supports the independence, because it's discretion that invites, however unintentionally, the sort of pressures from outside. You know, they sort of see a crack, if you will, in the armor, thinking, well, you don't have to do things according to any specific rule, so perhaps I could pressure you to do things a little bit more the way I'd like. Whereas if there were an explicit rule, then the Fed can sort of pull that out and say, not just, look, we're independent, but look, we're independent, and this is precisely what we need to be doing right now based on the sort of the instruction sheet that we work against. And that the Fed doesn't say right now, can't say right now. So it has the independence piece, but I think that independence is less immune to political pressure than it otherwise could be were it to have the complement, which would be then the monetary policy rule. So sort of take away its discretion, which just sounds maybe counterintuitive, but that degree of agency really opens up trouble, because then they're seen as the entity that could do something else, say, if they were pressured to. So that's the argument for the rule, in addition to the independence.
What would it take for there to be a rule?
So this is where perhaps it even becomes more counterintuitive. It's a great question. The Fed could set the rule, and that would go a long way to say, look, we are in charge of policy. We have policy independence. We don't have constitutional independence. Congress created us. The Congress could take us away. But we have policy independence. And within that purview, we have determined that this is an appropriate rules-based framework for monetary policy. And that would go a long way, because if nothing else, the conversations around pressure would necessarily attach themselves to the rule. And you'd have to talk about why you want the Fed to do something not just differently than what it's doing, but differently than what the rule states. So that would at least inform the conversation and sort of discipline the coercion, if you will, and maybe give the Fed a fighting chance. But what would really be nice would be, and here's the counterintuitive answer, for the Congress to impose the rule. Because if the Congress said, here is how you will respond to deviations of employment from what we'd like to see according to the mandate, or here is how you will respond to deviations of inflation from what we'd like to see according to the mandate. Now, for the Fed to be pressured to deviate from the rule, for that to be successful, would require an act of Congress. Mm-hmm. And so now you think of this situation we have right now, the administration would necessarily have to bring the Congress into this pressure campaign, because Jerome Powell would rightly have the sort of the capacity to say, we're following the rule. Here's the evidence of that. Unless we change the rule, there's nothing else we can do. The Fed would surrender some agency, but in the process, reinforce its independence.
So this would not be Congress saying, lower the interest rate. This would be Congress saying, we're going to take away a little discretion, put this rule in place so that you are not pressured by future Congress, future presidents, current presidents, private sector interests.
That's right.
We're shoring this up even further.
Exactly. Okay. That's right. The Fed, excellent point. The Fed would not be taking operational instructions from the Congress. The Fed would simply be taking the mandate along with a specific monetary policy rule or sort of framework of instructions, which would prevail across business cycles, across political administrations and so forth. And we know that would be the case because, you know, it would take literally an act of Congress to change the rule. So it would be, as a practical matter, it would not be feasible for Congress to change this rule according to a political cycle, because, you know, we can just imagine what that would take. So the rule would prevail. It would be longstanding. It would live long after any particular administration. And if there really were a serious campaign against the Fed in the direction of pressuring monetary policy, you'd have to bring Congress into that pressure campaign. And that would really change that dynamic. Again, just counterfactually, imagine right now what this would all look like if you also had House and Senate essentially part of the the discussion, shall we say, as a result of a congressionally imposed monetary policy rule.
What is the public expectation here of the central bank's immunity to politics, and how is that also being tested right now?
Yeah, this is a really good question. So inflation is, in effect, largely a self-fulfilling prophecy. And so you and I set our expectations of inflation. And that's just not just an intellectual exercise. That means you and I and 170 million of our friends, when we lobby for wages and salaries, compensation and so forth, we will price in what we reason we should price in to maintain our purchasing power. So what we're thinking inflation is going to be, what we set our expectations for, will drive our negotiations for wages and so on. So it's self-fulfilling. And if the central bank says the inflation rate will be 2% and the central bank is credible, and that means it has independence, and that independence is probably supported maybe by a rule, then you and I think, yeah, I think they're good for it. I think they're going to follow through on this. I'm going to, as it were, price in an expectation of inflation that equals what the Fed is targeting, right? And so all's right with the world, and that's the inflation that prevails, and we're fine. The alternative is a central bank that lacks that credibility, perhaps because it lacks the independence, perhaps in part because it's operating according to discretion with independence, and so independence is weak. Then you and I hear what the Fed says. The Fed is still well-intentioned. They say something like, we want to set inflation equal to 2%. We hear the same thing, but we think differently about it. We question the credibility. We question the follow-through, in effect. Again, not that because we think we're being lied to, but because we understand that if political pressure exerts itself on the Fed in the short run, the Fed may find reason to respond because it has some sort of movement, some room for maneuver. Mm-hmm. And so we set our expectations differently. We say, look, he said 2. We're thinking it's probably, when this whole thing boils out, it'll be 4. And so now we're operating according to 4, and that's self-fulfilling.
Yeah. Joe Santos, thank you so much for the update. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Laurie.
Joe Santos is the Dyckhouse Scholar in Money, Banking, and Regulation and director of the Ness School of Management at South Dakota State University. He writes a companion piece for Monday Macro. Search at Joseph Santos on the Substack platform. That's our conversation for today. I hope that it served you. From all of us here at STPB, I'm Laurie Walsh. Thank you for listening.